Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 167.
This week on the podcast, Brent went to the Iowa State Fair for you so you wouldn't have to eat fried butter.
And Americans can rest easy knowing that Donald Trump has promised to never ride a bicycle or eat Oreos ever again. Whew, what a relief.
Scott Walker has an opinion on the 14th Amendment. Actually, he has all the opinions.
And the Hillary Clinton email scandal has gotten so bad that even Joe Biden thinks maybe he could be president now.
The Greek Prime Minister called new elections in an effort to run against his past self.
And the Ashley Madison Leak provides the most comprehensive list of evangelical Christians ever compiled.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
We have been gone for 2 weeks.
We have.
You may or may not have noticed.
You did.
You did.
Be honest.
You felt
with
sad. I mean, you were excited that you got 2 weeks to listen to our episode with Kim Eaton.
Yeah, it was long.
It was long.
You might have needed it.
You might have needed the 2 weeks, but it was worth it.
That's right.
No new debates as of yet, but we have lots of exciting updates for you because Brent, while we were not recording, was actually at the Iowa State Fair.
That's right.
Ground zero
That's
for
right.
presidential shenanigans.
Doing some tweeting, so this is a good place to remind you that you should be following us on Twitter,
correct.
By the way.
Yeah, he did some heroic tweeting, he posted some photos, he visited Bernie's people, he did all the things you're supposed to do.
I did, yes.
He sent me a text with a photo of the back of Bernie Sanders' head, so I know he got quite close.
That's right. And Gwen Ifill's
head. And Gwen Ifill's head,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's right.
Not because, just Bernie.
That's right.
Gwen was there, too.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But, so in any case, you got a chance to see a couple of interesting people in and around the fair environs.
I did. Well, and before we even get to the fair, I don't even know if I've shared this story with you or not, but my parents were also there, and they had gone and sort of like done a tour of all of the campaign headquarters,
right.
except for Hillary's.
Right.
And let me tell you why. No one knows where it is.
Mystery
not
location.
Not a single
like a bunker somewhere.
It's shrouded in mystery. I mean, there is much like her candidacy
right.
on some level. But you cannot find it. And not only can you not find it, no one knows. They found her field office because that's what's on the website.
Right.
No one at the field office could tell them specifically where the campaign headquarters were.
That's
said it was
crazy.
They said it was downtown. They thought on 6th Avenue. We went all up and down 5th and 6th Avenue. Like
found nothing.
Found nothing. So then at the fair, we went to the building where everybody, like, has their booths and they're selling things and whatever else. But also, like, the state Democratic Party has people there, the GOP, you know, everybody
right.
sort of, like, whatever. So we asked, we were like, can you tell us where Hillary Clinton's campaign headquarters are?
Right.
Nope. Not, no one.
She is running a campaign intended for public voting, right?
Nope. Apparently not.
No. She so doesn't
no
want anyone to be
knew.
Able to find them.
And then my mom being mouthy like she is, while we were waiting at the fair for Sanders to come in, because they had told us, we went to his campaign headquarters, and they told us, they were like, meet at gate 11 at 1 o'clock, and we're all gonna walk in with Bernie, and so that was kind of fun, because then
right.
there were like, you know, 1,000 or
you
so
said
people
the
there,
largest hippie
like,
convention you'd ever encountered
exactly,
in Iowa.
Right, yeah, so people like cheering Bernie as he like walked
yeah,
in.
That's
like,
exciting.
So that was fun. They didn't know where it was either. But so while we were waiting there was like a CNN reporter, not anyone I recognized. It was probably like for online or digital or something
right.
like that, whatever. But like, so my mom goes over and asks her if she knows where it is. She
no
didn't.
Idea.
And she goes, that's not the first time I've heard that.
Whoa.
So if anyone, literally anyone knows where Hillary
Tweet
Clinton's campaign headquarters are in Des Moines.
We have people on the ground still there.
Tell us.
Tell us where it is. We want to send someone for a visit.
Yes.
You went in, had a
we
very friendly visit with Bernie's people.
They gave me free things.
They,
I gave you a free
yeah,
t-shirt.
Yeah, I got a t-shirt.
I took it. They gave us like 10 t-shirts.
yeah. I finally have a Bernie Sanders t-shirt.
Right? We took some additional bumper stickers, which
right.
we didn't even need because I already have one on my
no,
car
but
currently.
That's what you, just in case someone's
yeah.
like, I wish I had a Bernie Sanders bumper sticker.
Got like
you've
five.
Got one.
That's
yeah.
right. Yeah.
No, this is a campaign headquarters is the office at which you try to interact with the public. I mean, that's
yeah.
what your headquarters are for.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
it's people who are supporters of yours should be able to visit your campaign headquarters.
They can't.
It's bonkers. That's crazy town.
Yeah. Anyway.
So in any case, but at the fair.
At the fair, well, we went the first Saturday, and that was the day that, like, the most things were going on.
On.
I mean, there were 116,000 people at the
oh
fair that day. So it was crazy, and it was, I think, in large part due to the fact that so many politicians were there that
yeah.
day. So that was the day. They have this thing called the Soapbox. It's sponsored by the Des Moines Register, and it's a bale of hay, truly, that the presidential candidates can book time on. They have 20 minutes. They can use it however they want. usually they just sort of like give some version of their stump speech, but they could take questions if they wanted to. And so that day, Rick Santorum, Lincoln Chafee, and Bernie Sanders were scheduled there. Also scheduled to be at the fair were Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Neither of them spoke on the soapbox. Donald Trump had a sort of, at least for him, reasonable excuse why. I cannot figure out why
Hillary did. She's shrouded in mystery at every level, so you couldn't have possibly guessed as to
because
her
that
reason.
Was also shrouded in mystery, because we got there in the morning. We had heard that she was going to be there. She was not listed as
a guest.
They literally have a whiteboard on the soapbox.
Yeah, you took a picture
of
it.
Schedule.
Yeah.
So, again, at the Iowa Democratic Party booth, we were like, when is Hillary Clinton coming and where is she going?
Right.
They had no idea. So I got on Twitter, searched her name, and there's pictures of her wandering around the Iowa State Fair. She was already there, and
nobody
knew that she was there. She had
crazy.
She had a press avail.
Right.
She met separately with some of her large donors.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just sort of like did a walk around. So she did end up having a huge crowd follow her. Like, if you've seen the pictures of her at the fair, you know, she goes in to look at the butter cow, and there's like, you know, she basically shut down the whole building. But unless you happen to run into her entourage and then join it, I didn't see her.
No.
And I was looking for her.
Right.
But I couldn't find her.
You couldn't ask anyone because no one knew where she was going or what
she was
doing. She was just like a stealth visitor.
Right. Now, Donald Trump didn't want to speak at it because it's sponsored by the Des Moines Register, and their editorial board recently basically like wrote a piece, you know, slamming his entire existence in the human race.
Fair enough.
So
that's fair on both parts.
While I would agree with them on that, I can also understand why he didn't want to go to the soapbox. So he did the same thing that Clinton did. He flew in his helicopter.
Classic.
Gave rides to kids.
I heard about that.
But he couldn't do it from the fair because they wouldn't let him. So he was like parked in like a baseball field like a mile away.
Also creepy.
Yeah. So, but he also just did sort of like a walkthrough and had a huge entourage as well. I watched all of the speeches.
Mm-hmm.
So Rick Santorum went first and he immediately was talking about defunding Planned Parenthood. Before he even got to anything, like that was
classic.
Just like, you know, as soon as the microphone was in his hand, was defunding Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
Because he'd been at some rally earlier in the day with Governor Branstad and Joni Ernst, who was also there that day too, but I didn't see her.
Gross.
Yet, anyway, so he, you know, did his usual thing. I didn't watch Lincoln Chafee. I saw probably 30 seconds of Lincoln Chafee's, and then I was worried I would fall asleep.
Duh.
So didn't watch that. And then saw the Bernie one, which was amazing it was just amazing, and it was cool getting to see him. But, like, also, he had so many people there. They had said that they had, like, 1,500 RSVPs, but then also there's just the people at the fair. They basically shut down the whole main concourse, like, with people, like,
so
spread
exciting.
Into the street. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
I mean, fun. I feel like those are the visuals that are getting associated with his campaign. It's just, like, exciting, unexpected crowds and, like, general amounts of excitement about everything.
Yeah, totally. He had a fun little zinger that I saw get some press because Trump's helicopter was flying over.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like flying over most of the day. And that was like causing a big ruckus. Like every time it went over, everybody would sort of be like, oh, you know, like point and try and get a picture or whatever. I got a really terrible picture.
I saw that one.
Yeah. So Bernie was like, oh, there goes Trump. We left our helicopter at home in the garage. You know.
For Bernie, that's,
for him,
that's
I know,
quite
exactly.
a zinger.
He rarely breaks a smile, which is sort of, you know, what you love about him.
That's
he's just like an old, angry curmudgeon.
Exactly.
that's his charm.
That's his charm.
Bernie's charm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, but the fair was lovely as always. Had some fried food.
Of course.
Had some, well, fried food. That's what I had.
That's what you had. You didn't have a second thing after that.
No.
You can't after the fried food.
No,
but
you can't.
You're all set at that point.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. You had some fried food. You saw some Iowans. You did the things that people do.
That's right.
And then you came back to L.A., where not a single political candidate is going to arrive until they need tons of money.
That's right. Or unless you're Bernie Sanders.
Unless you're Bernie Sanders and you need a rally.
30,000 people to show up.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Which you can get in Los Angeles.
Right.
Yeah.
So in any case, speaking of rallies, Donald Trump finally got into the throw-a-large rally game and threw one of the more hilarious rallies I think we'll see in this cycle.
Yeah, I think this is maybe one of the greatest political events of our time.
It's so true.
Or of any time, potentially.
It's right up there with the rally to restore sanity, I think, in terms of just,
yes, just
like pure crazy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He has this rally planned. And they get way more RSVPs than they expected to. So yeah. they suddenly have 40,000 RSVPs, and they have to move it to a bigger venue because they're like, what are we going
to
do?
I think they moved it to, they kept moving it to bigger venues. I mean, they had to move it a couple times.
A couple times. It just it kept getting more exciting for everyone.
That's right.
So 40,000 RSVPs, they move it to a football stadium in Mobile, Alabama.
Yep.
But then only 20,000 people show up. So they have a very sad.
Yeah, it looked very empty despite
the fact that 20,000 people were at the rally.
Like, what you want to do when you're having a rally is make...
You want it to be too small, not too big.
Right.
And Hitler taught us anything.
Right. You want to make wherever you are look like it's packed.
You do a big rally in a small room, not a small rally in a big room.
That's right.
Those are visuals, guys. Some of...
Like, Bernie's people know that. They've had to have overflow rooms.
Yeah.
Like, where they show his, like, speech on a big screen.
Yeah.
Because, like, you don't want to risk having one empty seat.
No.
And so having 20,000 empty seats, despite having 20,000 people there, is not what you're looking
for. The Republicans have been doing this a lot, because even at the debate, if we recall, they packed half a stadium. They forgot to section off the part of the stadium that was empty. So it looked like they were standing in front of a big empty stadium.
Right.
And then the crowd wasn't even full. So the fact that there were tons of people there did not make it look like there were tons of people there.
No.
It just looked like a sparse crowd of like weird car crash onlookers, like rubberneckers. In any case, people, though, did wait in like huge lines for over 4 hours to get into
this
event.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a total circus.
Some classy people, too.
Classy people.
Yeah.
There was a neo-Confederate activist who passed out some racist literature.
Sure.
Headlines included, "Are Judeo-Christians totally blind, deaf, and dumb? And would-be world rulers connive again?"
Ah, yes.
And the main headline, which was, "Three names, black on white crime."
Oh, boy.
Classic.
Yep.
Trump flew to the venue in his own 757.
Sure.
First, he, like, kind of grazed the crowd, and then and then he flew
in. Did a flyover.
But then also Jeb Bush's team flew a plane with a banner behind it that read "Trump for higher taxes, Jeb for president," with four, the number four instead of the word four.
Uh-huh.
Trump entered to Sweet Home Alabama.
Sure. Yeah, it's like you said earlier. Do the people of Alabama get tired of hearing Sweet Home Alabama?
Like, that's the beginning of every event in Alabama.
I know.
Like, it's like, people in New York aren't trying to listen to New York, New York all day,
or
left and right.
Welcome to New York by
Taylor
Swift.
Exactly. One song that no one in New York has ever listened to.
I know.
In any case, during some favorite Trump some favorite Trump quotes.
Yeah.
First of all, he said his favorite book was the Bible. His second favorite book, by the way, his own book.
His own. I wonder which one. He's written a lot, actually.
I know.
He's prolific.
He's quote-unquote written a lot.
Yes.
Some other quotes include, "We have dummies, we have dummies, we have dummies."
Sure.
Trump's tired of the dummies, you know? Sick
he
of
is.
Dummies.
Yeah.
Oreos. I love Oreos, but I'll never eat them again.
Right. Well,
he is not sick of Oreos. He's fully sick of Oreos, but he's not going to try them again in the future, so it's fine.
No.
He's
yeah.
fine on the Oreo front. He's settled.
Right, and perhaps the reason why he's so annoyed with having all the dummies is because, quote, "I was, hopefully still am, really smart." So, yeah.
So, he knows
mm-hmm.
something.
And he's got a plan for women's health issues.
That's right. We're going to fix it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Quote.
Women's health issues. We're going to fix it.
It.
Not issues.
They have
it.
One health problem, and
we're
going to get to the bottom of it.
Plus, my personal favorite quote, "I swear to you, I will never, ever ride a bicycle."
What
context could that possibly have come in?
I don't know.
Like, bicycle riders are somehow, like, where was the demonizing of bicycle riders leading him?
Maybe the only thing that I can
guess.
Is it
like granola, like, non-driving bicycle?
That's what I was wondering.
City bike people?
Did it stem from some sort of, like, climate change?
Possibly.
Something or other?
Maybe he just really hates city bike. If you're a guy who drives around in limousines all the time, city bike would be a real fucking pain in the ass.
Right.
In any case, he exited to "We're Not Gonna Take It" by Twisted Sister, which is actually sort of genius, I think.
Yeah.
Got into his motorcade of seven Cadillac SUVs and the police. And jetted off to the great unknown.
He was wearing his Make America Great hat again, too.
Yes.
Which
Jeff Sessions was also wearing.
The senators from Alabama.
Yeah, no, it was a classy event through and through.
It was really, really great.
And a very sensible event. A lot of sense got made at that event.
Yeah. Well, this event comes on the heels of some other nonsense making that he'd been doing. Because he releases immigration plan, which is to basically boil down
is to send
all the immigrants back over the border and then force Mexico to pay to have the wall built itself.
Right. A thing
which,
that Mexico is going
to... I'm sure they're jumping at the chance to.
Like, I want to know...
If we don't have the political will to build the wall...
Like, where's Mexico's will? And, We've got to stop our people from leaving.
Right.
Like Mexico, by the way, a country that you can just walk in without a passport.
Right. Well, and the thing, here's the thing that I think someone pointed out recently, and I don't remember who it was, but was a good point. And I think in all of this talk about immigration and the Republicans talking about what they're going to do along the border, we should all take a second to remember is that our net immigration over the last few years has been zero.
Right.
People have not been coming here.
No.
Or at least people, you know, less people have been coming here than have been leaving.
Yeah.
So we don't even really necessarily
have an immigration
problem. We don't have an immigration problem. Now, we have people here illegally.
Right.
But
that's an easy problem to fix.
We have to figure out what to do with those people, exactly. Not figure out how to keep people from coming here because people aren't.
Exactly.
So
you only, by the way, historically have come here if shit was really desperate wherever you were.
Right.
You don't come here because you have a fabulous life in the French Riviera. Like, you come here because you live in Haiti and there's no roof over your head. Like,
right,
that's
exactly
why you come here.
Right, or you live in Central America. You live in Central America
and everyone's killing your family.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And I want to remind Trump that here's what the Mexican border looks like if he hasn't been there recently. Brent and I, a couple years ago, made a trip to go buy prescription drugs in Mexico.
We did.
Across the border from Yuma, Arizona.
Quite successfully, I might add.
Quite successfully. Here's why. Because the gate into Mexico was just it was a turnstile. It was like going into the subway without fare. You didn't have to pay a fare.
No.
You just walked in. Nobody was there.
Giant parking lot.
You can just walk right into Mexico.
Yeah.
Go buy whatever you're going to buy. The only difficulty is getting back into the States.
Right.
Mexico doesn't have a problem with too many Americans going into Mexico.
Sure.
They're happy to have as many Americans as want to come. The problem is that we have a problem with Mexicans coming to America.
Correct.
I mean, and it's not a problem in that I'm saying that it's a problem. We have a problem. In that it's like a political problem for someone like Trump. So there's no political will to get a wall built funded by Mexico.
Right.
Mexico couldn't give two shits about what's happening at the border.
No.
Nothing troublesome to them is happening at the border.
No, exactly.
So,
but one of the other things that was in his immigration plan
is a flashback to 2010.
It is. He wants to eliminate birthright citizenship, which is the 14th Amendment. So it's in the Constitution that the Republicans so desperately love
right.
and want to defend at every
right.
turn.
The Second Amendment cannot be changed at all. But the 14th Amendment we should just get rid of, you know?
That's right. Just
screw it.
Yeah, it's annoying.
It's totally annoying.
Yeah.
So on Sunday the 16th, last Sunday, he came out in support of ending birthright citizenship, which forced everyone else in the Republican field to figure out how to condemn the 14th Amendment most strongly. Now, this is a pet issue, as we recall, of Steve King's.
Right.
Famous cantaloupe calf thinker-over Steve King.
Yeah.
So it's not the brainchild of any kind of certified genius.
Certainly
and he
not.
Keeps trying to get it passed. He's tried in every session of Congress.
Yeah.
Currently, the bill only has 27 co-sponsors.
I'm shocked.
A lot of support with the GOP leadership,
sure.
but not with the GOP people.
Right.
In any case, suddenly everyone had to think about what they thought about the 14th Amendment.
Right.
And here's what they all realized. John Kasich, he had said recently that he didn't think the party needed to go so far in trying to crack down on immigration, but when he was running for governor in 2010, he reiterated his longtime support for getting rid of the 14th Amendment,
yep.
for ending birthright citizenship.
Yep.
Ron Paul, when he ran for Senate in 2010... Rand Paul, when he ran for Senate in 2010, said he didn't think the 14th Amendment was meant to apply to illegal aliens.
Interesting.
And then he has since pushed for a constitutional amendment to stop us from this scourge.
That's right.
Chris Christie said the issue needed to be reexamined. He's in a tough spot because New Jersey is not going to be like, let's end birthright citizenship. Like, half of New Jersey are immigrants. Like,
sure.
That's not a feasible policy there.
Yeah.
Rick Santorum has stated his support for altering the 14th Amendment in the past. And in May, he wrote a column where he debuted his immigration policy and wrote, other enticements to illegal immigration, such as birthright citizenship, should be ended. Only children born on American soil where at least one parent is a citizen or resident alien is automatically a U.S. citizen. Of developed countries other than the United States, only Canada has birthright citizenship. I want to remind our listeners that only Canada was also founded as a colony where everyone was an immigrant.
Right.
Like, let's talk about, like, other countries, of the developed world, the only countries
world, right.
that are in the developed world are countries where people came from those countries to come to America and
right.
Canada. America and Canada are the only colonies in the developed world.
Yeah.
Besides Australia.
Sure.
Which, by the way, basically has birthright citizenship themselves. It's bonkers to act like we're too good to follow Canada's policy on this issue.
Right.
Canada was following our policy.
Right.
We were the same fucking country, basically.
Right. Yeah.
In any case, then Bobby Jindal, interesting choice since he is himself the child of immigrants, mm-hmm. Said, tweeted, we need to end birthright citizenship for illegal immigrants.
Mm-hmm. True.
Then Lindsey Graham, who, by the way, was involved in this issue at its inception in 2010.
Sure.
Has been a longtime supporter of it. He said...
Well, he's from South Carolina, which is its own draconian,
they've got the kind of law where basically they try to make it so difficult for illegal immigrants that they'll leave by... Self-deportation is what they call it.
Yeah.
They'll try to leave by themselves, basically.
Yeah.
He has called for a change of the Constitution because he says immigrants will simply, quote, drop and leave their kids in the country.
Yeah, sure, that's what they're planning.
That's all what everyone has always been trying to do. Also, if they do that, then those kids are Americans. Too bad.
You're still left with the problem of birthright citizenship.
It was these comments that caused me to write that Huffington Post piece years ago about this very issue.
Yes, which you posted.
Because my grandmother was an anchor baby.
Right. That's on our Facebook page, by the way. You should go read it.
That's on our Facebook page. And my grandmother was an anchor baby who also qualifies for membership into the Daughters of the American Revolution. So she was not the kind of anchor baby they're talking about here.
No.
The problem is that once you start throwing those terms around, it gets too confusing. Suddenly, the wrong people get thrown into the mix.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Wasps are also sometimes accidentally anchor babies.
Yeah.
But so in any case... This is kind of troublesome because the GOP is really not in a good position to be pissing off all Hispanic voters. This is an issue that Hispanic voters care about.
Right.
Also, politically dangerous for other reasons because birthright citizenship was established as part of the, you know, part of the constitutional kind of package that came after we outlawed slavery.
Right.
It was sort of the overturning of Dred Scott, which is known as one of the worst Supreme Court decisions in American history.
Yeah.
Because in Dred Scott, they ruled that people of African ancestry could never become citizens of the U.S.
Right.
That was in 1857. By 1868, we had ratified the 14th Amendment. Things changed very fast after the Civil War.
Yeah.
But this is maybe not harkening back to an era that in this world of Black Lives Matter and other similar causes,
yeah.
we want to necessarily be talking about.
Right.
Don't
remind everyone of the Dred Scott ruling.
No, terrible plan.
That can't be your plan.
That can't be your plan.
No.
Let's go back to the time that America was great, when we had slavery and wouldn't let Black people be citizens.
I know.
Like, come on. Interestingly, Fiorina Bush, Huckabee, and Rubio all against changing the 14th Amendment.
Right. Well, what I have heard a lot of people saying, and I even heard Trump say this, too, in an interview, is that some of them are now sort of, like, saying that changing the Constitution, amending the Constitution, will be too hard. So they think they can change it in the courts.
Yeah.
So what they're trying to sort of, like, get around saying they want to amend the Constitution because that mm-hmm. sounds too insane. Because it is, exactly. So they're sort of, like, trying to, you know,
They're trying to pursue the ban gay marriage policy, which worked out so well for them in the past.
Bingo.
We're going to end up with every state having a special law that says that anyone born in that state is an American citizen.
I know.
Then there's Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz has... We have two people that we haven't mentioned.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz and Scott Walker.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz, interesting case, because Ted Cruz is himself a naturalized U.S. citizen.
Correct.
He's in a bit of a tough spot. In a tough spot because he was granted birthright citizenship in Canada at birth.
Right.
Where he was born. Neither of his parents are Canadian. His father is Cuban and his mother's American. And now he's sort of claiming he has birthright citizenship in America because he had one American parent. But he was born in Canada and did not move to America as a U.S. citizen.
Right.
He became a naturalized U.S. citizen when he was like 6 or something.
Yeah.
So there's even some questions, which we're guilty of raising and everyone's guilty of raising, about whether he even meets the definition of the basic qualifications for being
president,
as in you have to be 35 years old and you have to have been born in the U.S.
I would say he doesn't meet the intelligent qualifications.
There are many qualifications he doesn't meet. But... We recall that when John McCain ran for president, John McCain was born in Panama, but he was born on a U.S. military base to two American parents.
Right, but there were questions about that.
They had to pass a special law to ensure that he would be allowed to run.
Yeah.
If John McCain required a special law in order to be able to run for president...
Ted Cruz certainly
doesn't even meet half of the qualifications that John McCain met in being born in Panama to two American parents on a U.S. naval base.
Right.
To two Americans who were, by the way, working for the U.S. government at the time. So, I have a lot of questions about how he sees this going. But then, and also, I feel like this is like a really insensitive thing for someone in his position to say.
Come on.
Like, I'm a U.S. citizen at birth, but I can recognize why, considering that my own grandmother was an anchor baby, that why it's important that we grant U.S. citizenship to people at birth.
Yeah.
And this is, by the way, I mean, if you haven't read my thing, My grandmother was born here. My great-grandmother was born in China to missionaries. She's not Chinese, obviously. She was Canadian. If my grandmother had to be sent back to the home nation of her mother, where would she have gone? Her mother had never been to Canada. My grandmother had never been to China. Like, right. where were they going to send everyone back to?
Yeah.
This is the kind of confusion that you deal with when you try to start sending people back to places that they've never been.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Then there's Scott Walker.
Oh, boy.
Scott Walker.
He doesn't know
what he thinks.
He has some problems here.
He is having a difficult week figuring out what he thinks about birthright citizenship.
I would suggest that it maybe stems to the fact that he's an idiot.
I would agree with you there. It's hard to think when you can't.
That's right. Right. I mean, this is a man who doesn't have a college degree.
He doesn't have a college degree. He left in his final semester of college.
Mm, yes.
So he's a man who saw the light at the end of the tunnel and chose not to pursue it.
Ignored it.
Ignored the light at the end of the tunnel. He's that kind of a guy.
He's currently ignoring the light at the end of the tunnel now, which is he will not be president.
Exactly.
He's ignoring that.
And he's also the governor of Wisconsin, a state that I would argue doesn't have the biggest immigration issue of any of these states. So this isn't an issue he's having to tackle.
No.
He knows what to say about hating unions. He knows what to say about hating, you know, teachers and all.
Sure.
You know, he knows what to do when it comes to the union conversation.
Yeah.
He does not know what to say when it comes to immigration because he's never thought about it.
No.
And he doesn't think, so that's...
Right.
In any case, on Monday, he was talking to NBC and said that we should absolutely rethink the 14th Amendment.
Sure.
Then, on Friday, he told CNBC that he wasn't going to take a position one way or another.
Mm. Sure.
Probably because he started noticing that everyone sounded like a lunatic.
Right. And that was also, he admitted to being tired.
Yes.
Too.
Yes. He couldn't take a position because he was too tired to think about it.
Yeah.
That's the kind of president we want, by the way. Somebody who's too tired to take a position.
Yeah.
Then on Sunday, he said that his position finally was that no, we shouldn't amend the 14th Amendment, or change the 14th Amendment. But he tried to evade the question. It was with George Stephanopoulos.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to evade the question three separate times before he actually got to his point.
Yep.
First, he goes on this very long monologue about how he was in this small town in Iowa called like Plainville or Plainview or something that he used to live in as a child and got like confronted by people who don't like Obama. And George Stephanopoulos was like, okay.
What are you talking about?
But do you think we should change the 14th Amendment?
Yeah.
And then he tried to change the subject to E-Verify.
Oh, they love talking about E-Verify.
It's some bullshit. Then the third time he was asked, he finally said no. And it was... Because he thinks that, and this is what he had tried to say, I think, before, but, like, had not successfully said it because he was trying to use it as a way to not make a point and then had to use it to support the point he eventually tried to make. But he basically was like, we aren't actually following the laws that we have on the books. Like, the problem is enforcement. It's not that we are letting people come here and be citizens.
Right.
Which, if you had to take a crazy position on the issue... is better than assuming that anchor babies are the problem.
Right.
That was widely disputed from the get-go 4 or 5 years ago when we first started talking about it.
Yeah.
But it's still maybe not the point.
Right.
In any case.
So speaking, in a week, he had all the opinions.
All the opinions. He covered every single one of them.
Yeah.
Speaking of foreign policy, our resident foreign policy expert, Ben Carson,
a man
who has no political experience and only is famous because of one speech he gave at the National Prayer Breakfast.
Right. He has an immigration plan, too.
Yes.
And it's to drone everyone.
We're going
to
just drone the living daylights out of anyone at the border.
Right.
And that way they won't come in.
Right. Now, so he claimed that he was going to use drones along the border, and everyone immediately... was like, so you're just gonna like kill everybody at the border? And so then later in the week, he had to explain exactly what he was going to do with the drones, but he didn't really explain it in a way that like made it actually make any sense, because he said, you look at some of these caves and things out there, one drone strike, boom, and they're gone.
That still is you saying that you're gonna kill people at the border,
right? I think, what are these caves?
Are we in Afghanistan?
Is he thinking of Afghanistan? That's what I was going to say. Is he confused about the assignment here?
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he was. He's not a man with any foreign policy credentials.
No.
He's a brain surgeon. He's a pediatric brain surgeon.
That's right.
And while I would absolutely, of the choices in the Republican field, allow him to operate on my brain before anyone else.
That's right.
I would not allow him to determine foreign policy for me above anyone else.
No.
There are literally 1 million other people in the Republican field that I would choose before him.
All of them.
All of them. Every one of them.
Yeah.
Aside from Carly Fiorina, I don't think she knows either.
No, I don't think she knows either.
In any case, but luckily, we don't have to think about it anymore because God has endorsed.
Finally.
It's like, what does someone need to do to get God's fucking endorsement in the Republican race?
Well, you just have to
claim that you have it.
You just have to go to the rally for religious liberty
in Iowa.
And if you show up there, then you're the guy.
Then you're the guy.
And the guy who went was Ted Cruz.
And that's because he... organized it.
That's right.
His Iowa State Chairman Matt Schultz said, God raises special men and women to protect his people, and I believe this is one of those moments in time. Ted Cruz is that man who God has prepared for the moment in time.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So now we know.
Now we know. God made his salute, made it. Interestingly,
why have the election?
Well, they have to have the election because God is mysteriously choosing the fifth place candidate in Iowa as his choice.
Yeah.
So, 2,500 Iowans turned out to see Cruz at the Rally for Religious Liberty. And among his guests were like every Christian business owner who's ever tried to discriminate against gays and had retaliation against them because of it.
Yeah.
Because they were talking about religious liberty.
Right.
And what says no religious liberty better than anti-discrimination laws?
That's right. Well, and he had just, so he was in Iowa for the fair,
right,
where he had done the soapbox. And then one of the things that all of the candidates have to do at the Iowa State Fair is they have to go flip pork chops.
As you
that's
do.
That's the thing.
Listen.
You cannot be president
this is
if
a
you
state
have not flipped a pork chop
that has
at the
hog
Iowa
fries
state
and steak fries and,
yeah.
I mean, a lot of weird traditions.
Yeah. Anyway. Marco Rubio, going back to the fair really quickly, got himself into trouble because he took a bite of a pork tenderloin, which was that photo that I showed you of my sandwich that I had, which is basically, it's an Iowa delicacy. It's called a tenderloin.
Okay.
It's a sandwich that is like a flattened out pork chop that's like breaded and fried.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually quite delicious.
Yeah, sounds like.
But anyway, he took a bite of one of those, not in a sandwich.
Not in a sandwich.
He didn't know what he was supposed to do with it. It's a sandwich food. And so he just ate it. And then that was a huge
disrespecting
debacle.
The culture of Iowans everywhere.
That's right. Yeah. But anyway, so Ted Cruz was flipping pork chops
at
the Iowa pork producers, whatever, and was confronted by Ellen Page.
Who, somebody, by the way, is Canadian. Why was she at the Iowa State Fair?
Somebody sent me a link to this, and that was my first question, too. It was not that it was even interesting, but although it was, because they had a fairly lengthy conversation, one-on-one, like with cameras there. She's apparently filming some show or something where like she's about like gay discrimination or something. I don't know. Anyway, but she like confronted him about it, and so they had like this standoff while he's flipping pork chops at the Iowa State Fair.
I love it.
So good. But that's what they were talking about. They were talking about his, you know, religious liberties.
The fact that he believes that because religious liberties are under attack, every bigoted person should become part of his posse.
That's right.
I mean, this is really his strategy in Iowa. And it's not a terrible one for Iowa.
I was just about to say it's a good one.
It's a good one. He's really just going for that evangelical vote.
That's right.
He's just...
You can win there with just that.
Yeah, and that's what his plan is.
Yeah.
Currently, he's being overshadowed by the Trump publicity machine, which is not as much a machine as it is just its own... Like, Trump is, like, generating publicity by accident, just by being himself. He's not even having to think about it.
No.
There's not a machine.
He's just doing what he does.
He's just doing what he does, and it's getting a lot of publicity. It's the most natural publicity machine that anyone's ever thought of.
I know.
But because of it, people like Cruz, who, because of their extremely bigoted stances on everything, should probably be the front runner in Iowa...
There's no reason
is
not why
getting,
not.
He's in fifth place. He's not getting the kind of press
There's
that
so many better Iowa options for Republicans than Donald Trump.
So many. So many.
I mean,
all of,
almost, probably 15.
Exactly.
really.
Yeah. No, if you are looking for an extremist candidate, and it's, I mean, I think it's saying something exciting that Trump is sucking up this much oxygen, even in Iowa, where his policies don't really jibe with theirs when it comes to anything other than bigotry.
No, correct.
And he's not even that bigoted against anyone except Mexicans.
Correct.
He doesn't even care about anyone. Like, he doesn't care about gays.
He doesn't care about women.
No.
He does not share Iowa evangelicals' hatred of gays.
No. He couldn't give to... He's probably dealing with gay people on a
Always.
Constant basis.
Yeah.
He lives in New York City.
Yeah.
Like, it's... These are all things that he doesn't really share with the Iowa Republican electorate. But for some reason, his just general unlikeliness is, like, generating its own media firestorm.
Yeah.
And he's leading there.
Yeah.
And Ted Cruz, poor Ted Cruz.
I know.
Can't
outbigot
anyone.
Things.
He's doing all the right things. And even all the bigotry in the world won't get him that nomination.
No.
What a shame.
Sad for him.
Sad,
really.
Sad day for Ted Cruz and his weird chin. meanwhile, John Kasich this week made one of the classic Republican...
Yeah.
If there's rallying cries.
If there's one group of people that Republicans hate more than Mexicans,
and understandably so, because they also hate facts.
I know.
It's teachers.
It's teachers.
Yeah. When you're the party that's trying to proffer a vision of the world that doesn't include science or any, you know,
of course,
women.
Right. It makes sense to
it
hate
makes
teachers.
Sense to hate teachers. They're the ones teaching all the science. Americans believe in evolution because teachers taught them about evolution.
God
so.
Damn them.
But this week, Kasich, they're always trying to one-up each other in terms of, like, dismantling the, like, you know, the sort of teacher lobby.
Sure, yeah.
And this week, John Kasich said, if I were not president, if I were king in America, I would abolish all teachers' lounges where they sit together and worry about woe is us. Like,
what?
Well, and interestingly, this article talks about a school in Brooklyn that tried to get rid of teachers' desks and chairs because they thought if they weren't on the move, then they weren't teaching. And, like, how just, like, inhumane that was. Like, teachers wouldn't be... They weren't allowed to sit down.
Right. Well, didn't the president of the teachers' union say something about that,
Randy Weingarten, I think, tweeted at Kasich. She said, after you get rid of places teachers eat lunch, what's next? Getting rid of teachers' chairs so that they stand all day? Well, they tried that at a charter school in Brooklyn. This is, by the way, charter schools... A topic that Republicans love to talk about because they love charter schools because they think that's like free market education. Right. And they think basically that if we got rid of all the teachers, then education could finally go in the free market and it would be better for everyone.
Sure.
Competition.
Yeah.
Those schools don't perform better than regular schools, by the way. I have a lot to say about charter schools, which is a conversation for another day. But it is, their support of charter schools is a union busting tactic. And that is really what their goal is here. Demonizing teachers' unions is a surefire way to get uninformed people to get worried about everything.
Yeah.
Because it sort of like combines their favorite whipping boys, which are public employees and fact knowers. And so it's just sort of like a classic move of theirs. But so in any case, Kasich is getting into the action early. He spoke at this education summit that's sponsored by this news site, quote, news site, run by a failed CNN host named Campbell Brown.
Yeah.
Called 74 Million. Campbell Brown, no education background whatsoever.
No.
And other people have gone to speak to at this education summit as well. But apparently, so Kasich had like a 45-minute conversation with Brown where he mentioned this teacher's lounge policy that he would love if he were king. But he basically said it was to protect them from colluding.
Ah, yes.
You know how greedy teachers are.
Oh, my gosh.
Always trying to make a living wage.
Well, like, when will it end? That's why they get into teaching, obviously.
Yeah, it's for the money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always so much money in teaching. In all of history, there's been nothing but money showered on teachers.
Our parents were teachers.
We're rich.
I mean, we grew up
in lavish environments.
Lifestyles.
Of course.
I mean.
As you do with anytime you have a teacher parent.
Yeah.
You can guarantee it's escalades for miles.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But, so in any case, this, I think, marks the beginning of, because it's only a matter of time before Scott Walker gets in on the fun here. I mean,
oh, obviously.
He hates unions more than any person on earth.
Well positioned to speak to this.
And he and Bobby Jindal have both made huge education cuts in their states recently.
Yeah.
But so the teacher sort of rhetoric, the anti-teacher rhetoric is getting a lot more heated. So I think that, and Chris Christie, as we recall, wanted to punch teachers' unions in the face.
Yeah.
I think, he called unions the single most destructive force in education, which is my favorite, because I feel like the Republican Party is the single most destructive force in education.
I would agree.
In any case, I think that we're going to see a lot more of this rhetoric, and I don't think it's going to read with this current electorate.
No.
Because...
Well, and there's so many signs that, like, point to them literally just hating to spend money on education. I mean, there are these huge cuts, actually recently in Iowa, and this was a topic of conversation amongst people who I was hearing speak there too, is that they didn't pass a bipartisan education funding bill. The governor vetoed it. It was like a compromise bill on how much they were going to increase spending in education.
Right.
And he only did it by like 1% or whatever,
which
was sort of like the amount like they're required to or something to basically keep up with exactly. And so, but the Republicans and the Democrats came up with this package to like find funding to increase it by like 2.5% or something like that. And he vetoed it.
Was this what your old history teacher was writing that blog about?
Yes, my old band director.
Your old band director was writing that blog about?
Yeah, exactly.
One of Brent's old teachers is like a real force in the education scene in Iowa.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just sort of like things like that just sort of like go to show that they literally just hate giving.
They come back around because there's no way to sort of. Like, once you've defunded education, there's no way to ensure a good education for people who can't afford a good education.
Right.
And that comes back around to bite them later.
Yeah.
Because then they're like, what is all this crime? And it's like, well, no one has an education. They can't get jobs. Like, what are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
Like, that always comes back around to bite them in the end. And but for some reason, we just are stuck in a cycle of never upping funding for education.
Right.
We only ever decrease it.
Right.
And by the way, we do that while big corporations reap in a lot of the profits, because when we do increase funding for education in New York City, every time they increased funding for education, it basically went to a corporation who was either brought in to consult or brought in to like buy textbooks from or whatever. Like New York City school system is so big, they could be making their own textbooks.
Right.
They don't even need Rand McNally or whoever to be making their textbooks for them.
Right. Well, and just recently in Los Angeles, there was the whole scandal where we spent like billions of dollars on buying an iPad for everyone.
Exactly.
Like, that obviously was going to pocketbooks of...
Exactly.
You know, I mean,
nobody has fucking books anywhere. But
right.
like it, these are all things that are kind of like stuck forever in our cycle, but
yeah.
I don't think it's going to read with this year's electorate.
The, oh,
the
I kind don't
think
of so
the way that populist messages are resonating with them right
this
now
is like not the way to go.
This is not the way to go. Also, the two things that they're going to start hitting hard, the teachers and like undocumented people, are not going to resonate with the people they need to vote for them right now.
Correct.
They need young people and they need Hispanic voters to vote for them. And
right.
those are not the people that are going to vote for them.
And women.
And
they
women
do bad
who
with,
they do who terrible are, with because they can't stop offending them.
Who are teachers.
Who are teachers.
I mean, men are teachers too, but I mean like
the reason, you know, by the way, that teachers become the whipping boy for anti-union people is because they're not only, they're state employees or city employees, but they're also women.
Right.
It's a very large percentage of women.
Right.
So like when they beat up on the police, everyone's like, hold on.
Yeah.
How are these men supposed to support their families? But when they beat up on teachers, everyone's like, well, these women shouldn't be working.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Like that's how come teachers get the brunt.
Totally. Yeah. No,
which is crazy because they probably play as big a role in public safety as anyone else. I mean, as the police, you know, like, they're the ones who are socializing our children for us.
Right. Yeah.
No, in any case.
Yeah.
Moving on.
In final Republican news, well, thank God, Rand Paul is going to be able to run for president and senator.
Senate.
Up until Saturday, it was unclear as to whether that was going to be the case, because there's a law in Kentucky that you cannot appear on the same ballot twice. You can't double book. Yeah,
which
exactly.
Which is, some states have that law.
Right, exactly. So, the Republican Party of Kentucky had a big meeting this week and decided that
they were panicked they would lose the wonderful representation of Rand Paul.
Of Rand Paul in the Senate, right. So they changed the Republican primary to be a caucus system. So he's now not going to be on the same ballot because there's like, the caucus is like a separate thing from the primary ballot. So Rand Paul it actually needed 2/3 and it got 76%. So it was actually fairly close, and he went to this meeting himself to lobby them for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, here's
so
why.
It was a real concern.
He's personally funding the change.
He is.
He's putting $500,000 into funding this change.
Yes, that was like the condition.
That's
that
the most direct sort of like corruption that I can possibly imagine in my
right.
life.
Yeah. This from a man who is, I mean, I wish he were doing better, not because I would necessarily vote for him, but just because I feel like he has positions that would be nice to hear and
right.
we're not right now. And there was actually this week just like a big article on Politico about like where the fuck is the Rand Paul campaign, because
yeah.
like he's at like 4% and
getting
he was kind of a potential darling at one point, and
yeah.
now it's
he,
just
he's
like
not even getting the Ron Paul excitement.
No,
like Ron Paul was somebody who had nobody supporting him, but you heard about him all the time.
Right. What I someone said, oh, I was watching Bill Maher, and they were talking about money in politics. Oh, it was Claire McCaskill, actually,
right.
because her book is out, and she talked a lot about like how she hates having to go to fundraising and stuff like that, whatever. Anyway, but she was the one who actually said, she was like, and look at the case of Rand Paul, he hasn't found his billionaire yet.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's without a billionaire.
He's without a billionaire.
Oh,
and
poor Rand Paul.
And yes, exactly. I mean, I know you sort of said that in jest, but like on
right.
some level, like that... That is...
That's in the Republican Party
serious,
and in the Democratic Party, actually. But I mean...
It's a serious problem.
More so in the Republican Party, you have to have a billionaire to be
it's
running
a problem,
for president.
It's a problem for Rand, and it's also just a problem for
democracy.
Fucking America and
yeah.
democracy. Because, like, you shouldn't have to have a billionaire to be able to poll well. I mean,
right.
It's just...
Especially when you are offering, like, very specific different positions for most of the field.
Correct.
There
right.
are people in the Republican Party who do think like him.
Right.
And they probably don't realize it
right.
because...
There's more than 4%
yes.
in the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
And that's all he's polling.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
anyway.
No, it's crazy.
But he'll be able to run for both.
Thank God.
I'm sure he'll win one of them.
It was going to be sad if he couldn't, because he was going to lose his job.
Well, I was going to say,
he kept running for president.
He was going to have to pick. And a lot of people were
I wouldn't have picked president.
I know. Up until Saturday, people were wondering if, like, literally as of today, he may have dropped out of the presidential race.
Yeah.
He was saying that he wasn't going to do that.
That would have been a very early...
He may have had to have.
I wonder when you have to make the decision by...
Oh, yeah.
Because maybe he could have just sort of picked at the last
minute.
When
do they print the ballots?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
In any case, on the Democratic side, we also have some exciting news.
Oh, this is good.
Biden and Liz Warren had a secret meeting.
Secret meeting on Saturday. Yes.
That's exciting.
Like 2 hours.
Yeah.
They met at his place.
In the Naval Observatory.
The Naval Observatory. Upon his request.
Yeah.
And they met for a couple hours, and we don't really
talk
have
about economic
details,
policy, apparently.
Right? Economic policy.
This is a sign, you know, he said that he's thinking of getting into the race.
Right.
If he's consulting the Liz Warrens of the party.
Right. The
it's
reason
a sign
that
he recognizes where the race is going.
Yeah. If you're the vice president, and the reason that you're meeting with Elizabeth Warren. Like, the reason is that you're thinking about running for president.
Right. You're not just hanging out because you thought it'd be fun to hang out with her.
No.
Neither of them, P.S., look like very fun people.
Oh, I think Biden looks
like,
does.
Yeah, maybe sort of. He looks like more fun. Yeah,
yeah, more, yeah.
Actually, sure. He looks like a lot of fun because his Christmas card that they send to, like, all of the, like, White House and Capitol Hill staffers was, like, his family whitewater rafting.
Oh,
his whole extended family whitewater rafting. Nice. Yeah.
Well, and this comes on the heels of a meeting that he had last week with all of his top aides and advisors at his home in Delaware. So he's obviously sort of like the wheels are turning.
Yeah.
They're, you know.
Well, he's doing what everyone's doing and drafting Hillary.
Right. Exactly.
In the bike sense.
Right. Yes.
I keep having to say that because I'm also using drafting to mean getting pulled into the race. But really, right. He's like slowly waiting behind her for the moment to pass.
Right. Well, and that is what I think, and you and I have talked so much about this, is the only reason that he would get in the race is if he sees a world where she crashes and burns. And that world is, we may be living in that world right now, which we're going to get to in a second.
Yes.
But I mean, like, when you look at the things that he can sort of beat her on, they don't exist.
No.
He doesn't offer anything extra. He's not younger than her. He isn't going to win more of the women vote, obviously. No. He's not going to win more of the African-American vote.
No.
He's not going... He doesn't have lefty cred. Maybe he's trying to get some from Liz Warren.
I think he's trying to, but he's not going to.
But, like, he doesn't have any of the things that he's going to be able to sort of run on in opposition to her.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't exist.
No, he can only replace her in the race.
He can only replace her. Right.
He can't run against her.
No.
That's...
No.
But, I mean, this is an interesting development because it's funny also, and I think very telling, that everyone's trying to court Liz Warren. She's the most powerful person right now in Washington because the entire Democratic left, the entire Democratic Party, I mean, is trying to court the left.
Right.
They can't court Bernie Sanders because he's running for president.
Running.
So they're all like, well, we have Liz at least. Let's meet with her, see what she says.
Well, and she also said this week, she had a very interesting quote where she said she didn't feel, she hasn't endorsed anybody, but she said that she didn't feel like anyone had been, quote, anointed, which the word anointed, I felt like, was obviously a direct, not necessarily jab at Hillary Clinton, but it was in regards to Hillary Clinton.
About Hillary Clinton.
So she's obviously, and we know that those two have met with each other.
Yes.
So she's obviously not ready to sort of, like, declare that Hillary Clinton is going to be the
person,
because... She
can't and maintain her own constituency.
No,
she... This early. If it looks like there's no option, then she can do it. But, I mean, with Bernie Sanders polling as well as he's polling, Liz Warren cannot keep her own constituency happy
and
endorse
Hillary Clinton. No.
That, and she would lose everything that she has as a politician if she did that.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be the end of her.
So the reason why he may be seeing a lane to run in is that this email scandal
email thing is not going away.
It's not going away at all. And it just seems to be getting worse. And, you know, on some level, I was almost going to say I feel bad for her. I don't.
Well, we often have to say this about Hillary Clinton, and I think it's telling that so many times we have to start a podcast with saying that we feel bad for the candidate we don't support in the race.
Right, and who's winning.
And who's winning. Like, we're often having to be like, I feel bad because Benghazi's not going away, or I feel bad because the email scandal's not going away.
Right.
I feel bad because that Iraq vote's not going away. Like,
These
are all things I don't actually feel that bad about, but it is unfortunate that she has so many things, so much baggage.
What I think is unfortunate is her handling of this.
Yes.
Because we have sort of already, I think, collectively as a nation, established that she didn't do anything illegal.
Right. And
so,
also that this scandal is stupid.
That it's stupid. Right. Exactly. But there are just so many questions that speak to sort of like the broader issue that people have with her, just sort of like as a human and candidate and
just public figure.
Right. Exactly. So she had a press conference this week because there were some new developments this week that we'll get to, but she had a press conference on Tuesday in Nevada and she was getting a lot of questions about it and she became sort of exasperated and she cut the press conference short and walked away. And as she was walking away, one of the reporters like screamed some last question at her and she threw up her hands in the air and she goes, "Nobody talks to me about this other than you guys." Which, I mean, that's
those are the guys.
That's why we have the press.
Right.
Because, I mean, that's...
Your own people aren't going to talk about a scandal with you.
No, that's not
what you do.
Nobody shows up to a Hillary Clinton town hall and asks her about her email scandal.
No.
Like, that's not what
it's
happens.
Not what's happening.
So, anyway, but I think there are a few recent problems that have developed. Because I think that she obviously thinks that it's a non-scandal, which I get. It is her right to think that because on some level she's right. But she's been joking a lot about it lately, and that makes her seem really glib and not, like, she doesn't understand the seriousness of it. Because, like, at that same press conference, she was asked about having wiped the server clean, because she's handed over the server to the FBI because they asked for it.
Right.
So, but it had been wiped clean, but supposedly they can still, like, glean some things from it or something like that or whatever.
I don't know.
And so in response to the server being wiped clean, she immediately was like, what do you mean? Like, with a cloth?
Okay.
And it's like, that's not
the right answer.
That's not the right answer. No. She had also made some statement in Iowa recently where she was talking about Snapchat, where she was like, I like Snapchat so much because those messages just automatically delete themselves, which is
funny.
Whoever wrote that,
good
God bless
them. Yeah.
But like, that is not,
well,
that's
and also,
not
this is
what
funny because I think that she's trying to be this, in this cycle, she's trying to be more human and she's trying to seem like a real person because she comes off as really shrill. You know, when, yeah. In 2008, she was criticized for being very shrill. She comes off as very shrill when she's only speaking to crowds.
Right.
And she's she's actually very personable in person and very likable. And they're trying to sort of like make that the right story. But in doing that, they're making it impossible for her to like overcome these stupid nagging questions.
Right.
Because she's joking her way out of it. And everyone's sort of like, well, like, no, we have a right to ask you about these things.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Why can't you just answer our questions?
Right. There's also, you know, she has been changing the story, although subtly it's been noticeable. And that, I think, is also sort of like giving people pause in thinking whether she knows that there's more to this than she's actually sort of letting on. Because, like, when she was sort of at issue here is whether she was sending things that she shouldn't have been sending from this email server because it's
like
sort of like
information.
Classified information. So initially, she said that there was no classified material on the server. Like, it was sort of like an unequivocal, no, that didn't happen.
But then we found out that there was classified.
There was. But it had been
classified
changed
after
to classified after the fact. So then she changed it to, she said, she added at that time. There was no classified material at that time. Now she has changed it again to say, I did not send any material that was marked or designated classified.
It's like she's giving a lawyer response.
Exactly. And that, I think, is what the problem is because, like,
it
she's
just
sort of,
insincere
she's trying, you know, it sort of harkens back to sort of like, what the definition of is.
Exactly, yeah.
You know? And that is what people already have this preconceived notion of what the Clintons are and what they do and how they get
around
things.
They're the kind of people to try to
change
the definition of is.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that, adding marked or designated classified, basically what that allows her to do is that, it's basically allowing her to say that unless it came to her and said that it was classified, she wouldn't have known that it was classified,
right,
which on some level is true. But also, I think critics would say, and I would potentially agree with them, that as the Secretary of State, if you are reading something, regardless whether it has a little like red exclamation point on it or not,
like you might be the person who could decide if it's classified.
You might know.
Right.
Right? Like,
you might suspect that it's sensitive.
Right.
Even if it's not officially classified.
Right. Because you read it.
Right.
And you are the head of the State Department.
Right. As a person who gets to, in some sense, be part of determining what is and is not classified.
So she seems to just be saying things that would sort of like legally get her out of any sort of trouble.
Yeah. And that's a class. I mean, it's more that's what we expect from her than it is that no one else would do that. I mean, everyone would do that in this situation, but it's sort of like, she has the sort of additional burden of having the image of being the kind of person who...
Well, and she is the only person who can figure out how to make this go away. I mean, yes, the press is going to keep asking her about it, but she's got to do better than either joking about it or giving lawyer answers.
Yeah.
Jerry Brown was on Meet the Press this morning, and they asked him about it, and he said... he said that the email scandal was like a vampire, and she needed to find the dagger. You know, she's got to figure out what it is. And it's going to be hard. I'm not saying that, like, it's like an easy, like, oh, here's
but
what I'll say.
But her people are
like,
terrible at figuring it out. They never can make anything go away.
They can't. Yeah. So, but there's, and the other thing that I think is hard is that there's so many questions. I mean, we just talked about sort of, you know, what we talked about, but there are other things, you know, there's Huma Abedin was using a Clinton email account too. So like, what was she sending out? We haven't even sort of like gotten into that, you know,
decide about the personal emails that she deleted before she handed the information over?
Right.
How did
and
she
that's
decide
another
what was
thing
personal?
Because she claimed that she only deleted personal things. But then there was the whole thing where like Sydney, she emails Sidney Blumenthal, who's like a good friend of hers, who she was like asking things about Benghazi and stuff like that. And he handed over all of his emails to the Benghazi subcommittee, and the emails that he had received from her were not in the batch of emails that she handed over. So, like, obviously, whatever criteria she was using is suspect. So there's just all these things that just, like, there's so many questions. So it's like, it's going to be hard to make it go away, but, like, you got to do
you gotta
it.
Think, and, you got to change
this. And I, now. Like, I've been expressing a lot of concern over this
for
recently because, like, while I would prefer that Bernie Sanders, like, be the president, that would be great to me, I'm afraid that she's going to win the nomination because the people are going to, you know, elect her as our nominee, not thinking about this because she's telling them that there's nothing, and then we're stuck with her as our nominee, and then we're fucked.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't want to get into. Like, right.
This is what the primary season is for, is making sure that your candidate is electable.
Yes, exactly. And like, I would love for her to be able to, as much as I love Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, I would love for her to be able to make this go away.
Yeah. Yeah, no. They don't need this to beat her if they're going to beat her.
Right.
This is not the reason that they need to beat her. If she could figure out how to make this go away, it would at least show that her campaign is competent at something. Right. But, like, this is not why Bernie Sanders would beat Hillary Clinton.
Bernie Sanders hasn't said one word about her.
He doesn't need to.
He doesn't care.
I mean, Bernie Sanders is actually beating her on issues.
Right.
These scandals don't matter to him. That's, I mean, in the general, these scandals matter because they will matter to the Republicans who don't have issues to beat her on.
Right.
But they're not going to matter to the
primary. And they'll matter to independents who are suspect of the Clintons.
Right. Which even a lot of Democrats are suspect of the Clintons.
Yeah.
In any case, Hillary also had a kind of contentious meeting with Black Lives Matter, which was her first.
Yeah, this is an interesting one.
They tried to get into one of her events to disrupt it. Right. They did not get in. Right. They ended up in an overflow room. But she came to talk to them after the fact. And it was an interesting conversation for a lot of reasons. It sort of touched on a lot of the concerns that I'm seeing white progressives specifically, and also just sort of mainline Democrats express about how this movement is going forward. But it also kind of, like, it's sort of a hilarious exchange where she's like, tell me what to do about it. And they're like, we shouldn't have to tell you what to do about it. And then she's like, well, if you don't think it's your job to have a plan, should I only talk to white people about this?
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, maybe stay clear of that comment. But they did have a conversation with her, unlike with Bernie, where they just shut him down.
Yeah.
Which I felt like at least they're letting people have conversations. But I also, I would have liked at some point to see them have a conversation in public. They had a private meeting with him.
They did. Well, and they have also now publicly expressed that they're good with him because he actually, and we don't have all the details of it, but he released his plan this week, which was super extensive just in terms of, you know, sort of like dealing with, you know, the prison and industrial complex
and dealing with a lot of issues he had been touching on from the economic perspective. And he really like clarified that there were racial tensions at play in a lot of these issues as well, and that those needed to be addressed.
Right. So he's back in good with the Black Lives
Matter people. Of course, that news did not get transmitted as effectively as the news that he wasn't in good with them. So that's why I feel like this strategy has always irked me a little.
I agree.
But with Hillary, they had, like, the conversation is, it's funny because she really, like, is part, I mean, the Clintons are sort of like the architects to a lot of, like, legal policies that ended up really harming the Black community.
Which is interesting because he was the first Black president. I know. As people like to call
him. But, you know, they're sort of like, so they were, she was confronted about, a lot, you know, the war on drugs and like a lot of these other policies that they were sort of partially, you know, responsible for. Yeah. And she kind of like basically said to them, like, you can tell me that you're frustrated, but you're going to have to come together as a movement and say, here's what we want done about it. The women's rights movement did that. The gay rights movement did that. We had specific policies. Like, we have to find some common ground here. But you need to help me know what that common ground is.
Right.
And they were sort of like, you don't need to tell Black people what we need to know, and we won't tell you what you need to do. At which point, she was sort of like, I mean, I'm asking you to tell me, like, what I don't, like, I don't, I'm not telling you to do help. Anything, but tell me, help me, help myself.
Help me to help you.
Right.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Exactly. And they were sort of like, well, we can't do anything about it. It's, you know, you have to do something about it. And, you know, we're having this conversation to push back. And then they all started using the word respectfully while insulting each other a lot. Where they say, okay, you know, the guy says, and it's a conversation to push back respectfully. And she says, well, respectfully, if that's your position, then I'll only talk to white people about how we're going to solve these very real problems. But then he goes on and says respectfully 1,000 times. And then she goes on. But she, at the end, the sort of quote that and comes out of this is, I don't believe you change hearts. I believe you change laws. You change allocation of resources. You change the way systems operate.
Well, and she's absolutely, I mean, from a
politician's perspective, I think she's right.
I do too.
And I think that if they're going to carry on confronting politicians, Black Lives Matter has to acknowledge that they have to also be part of the solution as much as the disrupting is working for them to some degree.
Right.
I was saying to Brent earlier, I was like, white people don't think about how great it is to be white. You don't think about how great it is to be, you know, on top. Men don't think about how great it is to be men all the time. They're not forced at work all day to think, would this be different if I were not a man?
Right.
women have to think all day at work, right. would I be treated differently if I were right. a man?
And black people have to think all day,
would I be treated differently in this situation if I were white? Right. White people don't think that. They don't think about race at all during the day. They, if you ask white people, there is no race problem because it's not being directed at them. You know.
Well, and that was, I think, and she even said at one point, I think, didn't she, where she was like, you know, we have to do more than, like, just change white hearts. Like, we can right. all, we can sort of collectively say we need to do better, and we can all say that we're not racist and things like that, but, like, right. there has to be
she
more
She said you can get great
that.
Lip service from as many white people as you can pack into Yankee Stadium and a million more like it who are going to say, oh, we get it, we're going to be nicer, but that's not enough, at least right. in my book, which I think to some degree is true.
That's right.
You can't know what you don't know. White right. people don't know what it is to be black. They can't know what it is that they're doing that is sort of a part of our, you know, that we're all socialized right. to do that is the problem. And we can guess, sure. but we won't be able to guess as accurately as yeah. if people told us.
right.
It's like, you know, in the workplace, you can't, men don't figure out the soft sexism. You know, I've been blogging about soft sexism. I've been right. talking a lot about soft sexism. Men don't figure out what they're doing that's sexist. Women have to tell them.
Right.
It's frustrating. It's not fair.
No,
but it's
not.
But when you talk about a political movement versus just like a social change movement,
right.
it's what you have to do. If Black Lives Matter is just trying to change the environment that we live in, they don't right. have to have a plan.
No,
if
because we talked a lot about this during Occupy.
Exactly.
Because so many people were like, well, what's your plan? And their plan
was to
be
the discussion.
Pissed off. Right.
It was to change
and
the discussion,
did.
And they did.
Right.
And that's, I think, to some degree what Black Lives Matter is succeeding at right now. They're doing
totally.
That very effectively.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
we're talking about
when
it.
They start confronting politicians individually, they have to have the second prong,
yes.
which is, here's where we see that you can help us. Because right. politicians only do what they feel a constituency can help, you know, can support them in. They
right.
they are not real people. They're just sort of like, you know, they're sort of looking for the votes.
Yeah.
So they need to sort of like be directed to do things that can get them votes. And that's kind of, I think, where this is maybe going to become a sort of frustrating refrain in the political conversation during this cycle. I think
yeah.
that's something that at some point, like, yeah, it's not fair to have to tell everyone how they should stop oppressing you.
Right.
But at the same time, if they're not being oppressed, they may not know what it is. They may not know how to look for the clues,
right.
which is what I think a lot of white people, especially white people who live in not very diverse places,
yeah.
don't even know how to look
they
for the
know.
Clues.
Yeah.
You know? And that's kind of like, that's the part of the conversation that I think political policy helps address.
Yeah.
And that's what she's sort of saying here. So anyway, it was an interesting conversation, but a little contentious.
It was.
Yeah. Not as contentious as the ones with Bernie Sanders where he didn't get to speak at all.
I know. Yeah.
Well,
hopefully they won't be interrupting
But hopefully
him
they can stop interrupting him. Yeah, I hope that was sort of just like an early blip in the campaign cycle.
I think it was.
So that we can maybe talk about these issues with people who've actually yeah. been responsible right. for policies directly.
Well, I was
going
to say, there's no reason to interrupt him any
problems.
Longer because he has declared that he's going to do what they want him to.
Right.
So
he's also not responsible for the policies that brought us to this
right.
point either,
right.
which she is to some degree. You know, like
yeah.
she has been part of these policies. She
yeah.
supported a lot of policies that have only serve to make things worse for black families.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I think, why I was so frustrated to not see her confronted earlier.
Yeah.
In any case, Greece has gone off the fucking rails.
This is insane, by the way. I mean, we know that...
Greece is off the rails.
Right, we've talked a lot about...
Greece has never been on the rails particularly.
We don't need to give you the backstory here.
No.
But what we do need to tell you is that...
Spiros resigned. Their prime minister resigned so that he can be reelected in a new vote to kind of... you know, consolidate
right.
his legitimacy because his party walked
right.
out on him.
He liked being elected the first time so much that
yeah.
he thought, why
well,
not
and I think
try
he's
going to
win
again.
The second election, but a third of his party's lawmakers walked out on him and formally split.
Right.
Because they are mad because he wants to try to pass this bailout measure
right.
because
to
Germany
stay in the
is forcing his hand.
Blah, blah, blah.
Right. And his party was like, fuck no.
Right.
So this
That's
is not,
not
we got
why
elected
we elected you in the first
Specifically not
place.
To do this.
Right.
So in any case... they walked out on him on Friday. He
right.
decided to call for a new election. He's trying to sort of cobble together support from a bunch of more moderate factions.
Right. Basically, he wants to take...
because he lost his majority.
Right. Exactly. So he's trying to get the majority back through sort of, like you said, cobbling together, like, you know, different parties, basically, who are going to support this bill to pass
exactly.
the bailout.
And this is after Greek citizens voted no on the bailout.
Hello.
But I mean, he's also concerned, you know, Greek citizens also, I think, by and large, don't want to leave the Eurozone. They don't want to do these bailout terms, but they also don't want to leave the Eurozone. So
right.
I think he's sort of, I mean, he, we knew, was elected to be stuck in between a rock and a hard place. Like,
that's,
he was never elected
no.
to not be that in that position. So I think to some degree, he probably expected that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
At the same time, I feel like it's only getting more exciting over there.
Definitely.
I mean, and this is like basically...
And this is the third election they've had in 3 years.
I know. They just call a new election every 10 minutes. I know. But I mean, that's what you have to do in the Greek system.
God, I would love that.
I mean, elections I love
are like
voting.
My favorite thing.
I know. And to have all these like sudden elections where you have to be like, in a month, we all have to...
A surprise election?
A surprise election? That's
oh my
a dream.
God. Come on.
It's a dream. And if I get to vote once a year in a big race...
Big, I know.
Because I mean, like
we get to vote once a year.
We get to vote once a year, but like not for fucking Congress. Where no. Like, we just reelect the same person for the 40 years. Like, I want to vote in like a big election every year.
Yeah, man.
And we only get to really vote every 2 years for anything substantial.
Yeah.
State elections here are kind of a joke. So, it's exciting times.
It is. God, Greece.
Yeah, well, Greece has always been a little politically exciting. But this is, as we've said before, like a really interesting thing to watch because it says a lot about what some of these other debt-ridden states are going to have to reckon with. And I think it's also created some dissension in the ranks in the more powerful European states because France is sort of like not thrilled with Germany for forcing everyone's hand in this. Germany is being a bully. Everyone is very uncomfortable with Germany being a bully for good reason.
Yeah.
Germany's bullying in the past hasn't worked out well for anyone.
No.
France recalls that they had to be bailed out by the US in World War II the last time Germany was being a horrible bully.
Yeah.
I mean, this doesn't bring up happy memories for anyone.
No.
So it's sort of interesting to see what's going to happen here. So in any case, in final news.
Oh God. Final and potentially best
and
news.
And potentially best news.
By the way, this Ashley Madison hack
is a dream upon dream.
Oh, God. I love every second of this.
I mean...
So, Ashley Madison, as you know, I'm sure if you live in the world, is a site that you sign up to online to...
Commit adultery.
Have an extramarital affair. Right, exactly. And that's their tagline. It's like something like, oh, it's life is short, have an affair.
Yeah.
That's their tagline. Yeah. Right. So, anyway, some group hacked them and then released all of the information of everybody who had an account on the site online this week.
If you were wondering who is an evangelical Christian in America... You can now find their name on a list of Ashley Madison subscribers.
That's right.
If you were wondering whether Josh Duggar spent $1,000 on Ashley Madison memberships...
Well, he did.
...under several different locations, you'd be correct.
That's right.
He most certainly did.
Yes. He also had an account, and he released a statement where he admitted to it. He also admitted being addicted to porn.
Like all humans. Well, at the point that we're having to shame everyone for being addicted to porn, it's like, get over yourselves.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
But in any case, among the other people who are subscribing to Ashley Madison is this... I don't know if you guys have seen this video. I saw it recently.
I know. You mentioned to me after I told you about it. You were like, oh, they're the ones from this such and such video. And I was like,
there's this dumb video of this dumb couple being dumb.
Sam and Nia.
Sam and Nia, where the guy surprises his wife with a pregnancy, a positive pregnancy test that supposedly is hers.
Yes.
I don't know how he did it.
Well, a lot of people thought it was staged.
It was certainly staged.
By the way. Yeah.
P.S. Like, obviously.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's this boring video where she gets excited. At first, she's like in shock and whatever.
Yeah.
And then they released another video a few days later because she'd had a miscarriage.
Right.
He, Christian vlogger Sam.
Right.
Among the Ashley Madison subscribers as well.
Yes. Uh-huh. But it's okay, though.
No. Thank God. Guys, it's super easy to get forgiveness for this sort of stuff from God.
You just have to ask.
You just ask.
That's it.
Nia forgave him, and then he sought forgiveness from God.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, he was just
forgiven.
So it's pretty simple.
He's been, quote, completely cleansed of the sin.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So it's so easy.
Yeah.
So just...
That's it.
Dealt with.
Well, this has always been, I mean, and, you know, as I get that, because that is sort of, you know, one of the principles of Christianity. Like, you are able to ask forgiveness for your sins, and that is sort of like it. And I get that, and that is what you learn, and I understand.
I feel like, though, you don't usually just get it.
See, that's...
There's usually some penance
involved. See, that's the thing. And I feel like so many people who are Christian evangelicals, and, you know, I'm not saying that he's a Republican, although I'm guessing that he is.
You are saying that he is. But
yes. But, you know, we see this all the time where, you know, Democrats do something like this, and they are held... insanely accountable for it because, like, you know, they have to resign, and the right can't sort of like acknowledge that, you know, maybe the Democrats could ask for forgiveness too from God, but that you can't.
Right.
You know, we've seen this with
Elliot Spitzer, Anthony Weiner.
Right. And, you know, when you look at, say, someone like Mark Sanford, he's back in Congress now because he had an extramarital affair, left his post, as governor.
Disappeared to go to Argentina.
Right, but that was fine.
That's fine, because he asked for forgiveness.
He was able to ask for forgiveness. So while, yes, that is accurate as a Christian that you are able to do that. Right. Like, there's
it's this selectively
double,
applied.
It's selectively applied, and there's a double standard that really fucking pisses me off.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
also, this is not how forgiveness works.
No.
You don't just get to do anything you want and then ask God for forgiveness. And he's like, that's cool. Like,
right.
That's not what that whole principle is intended.
There's also a whole repentance principle.
Correct.
Too.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know that he's familiar with it.
Well.
But yeah, like, this is not, you don't ever get fully cleansed of yours. It's more of a cumulative thing. Over time, if you were generally a good person, that's what Christianity is supposed to encourage you to be. It's like generally a good person.
It's just
maybe
not
you slip up
it.
Every once in a while and you get forgiveness for that because you're trying.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like you get to be an asshole and then everyone's like, well, luckily I was forgiven for everything.
Correct.
That's not what the point is.
It's
and
not
I say
point.
This as a non-Christian who just made that up, but I know it's true.
Well, and
I've
it
lived
is.
In the world. I live in a
yeah.
Judeo-Christian society of some
yeah.
sort. Like I understand the most basic principles of
right.
of what this principle of forgiveness is supposed to be because I'm a decent human being.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's another way that you can have a moral compass.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yep. That's
case.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
And what's so funny is I feel like these, like, they have to go through all this trouble because they have such, like, sort of strict morality to begin with. Like, they make their own bed
for
this
stuff.
They
did. That's right.
If they were like, free love is great, then they wouldn't have to apologize for any of this.
Right. Exactly.
In any case,
oh, God,
also,
you know who's pissed?
Canada. Two Canadian law firms have filed a class action lawsuit for $578 million against the company that runs Ashley Madison on behalf of just Canadians.
Canada. That's so good. They're not happy.
They're not
okay.
having this. They don't no. want to be shamed for their extramarital affairs
no.
in Canada.
Who
they
does?
Have too much going on with all that free health care. Who has time for all that? In any case.
Oh, God.
That's the news this
yeah,
week. Also, we meant to mention that we're very sorry to hear that Jimmy Carter...
Yes, just turned 90 recently.
Just turned 90,
and
has cancer.
Yeah, he has brain cancer. It's
brain
again,
cancer.
Like melanoma, I think it's spread. And,
yeah.
You know, so that's not good.
So that's
we,
bad news.
We wish him well.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
But... After that downer, that's the news
I
this
know.
Week.
Wah, wah.
We'll be back
next
week with what can only be more exciting news
that's
about what Trump is up to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, have a good week. Bye.
Bye.